We would like to acknowledge that the land on which CITR operates and broadcast, and where many of you are listening to the program from, is the traditional, ancestral, and unceded territory of the Musqueam people.
Hello and welcome to That Song from That Movie. I'm Movie Maverick Mike.
And I'm Logan the Extra. Today we're going to talk about Titanic and the song My Heart Will Go On by Celine Dion.
When Titanic came out in 1997, it was 6 months delayed and wildly over budget, so much so that Fox Studios brought in Paramount Pictures as a partner to help with the rising costs of the production for a share of the distribution rights. Also, there was really no stars in this cast at the time. Kate Winslet was an up-and-coming English starlet, and Leonardo DiCaprio was just some kid with an Oscar nomination. Also working against it was it ran for 3 hours long, so theaters were strapped to fit it in every evening. And the ending of the movie was a well-known historical fact. But despite all of this, director and big spender James Cameron sailed Titanic, to record-breaking heights, or record-breaking depths, that's a better way to put it. It remains one of the three most popular movies of all time.
Hola, hola, hola. This is DJ Bruja.
And this is DJ D-Rod.
From
Viva Porú, el ungüento para el alma.
This week is Fun Drive here at CITR, the one time each year where we ask for your support to help us keep local, independent, and alternative voices on the air.
We said yes to CITR 5 years ago, and we will continue to say yes to CITR 5 years from now. The question is, will you?
Supporting CITR is no gamble. This love is made to last. If you're in a position to contribute, please visit donatetocitr.ca to donate.
Gracias y besitos.
You're listening to Movie Maverick Mike and Logan the Extra on CITR 101.9 FM. So Logan, when you saw Titanic, what did you think of the movie?
I think it's a really good movie. I mean, James Cameron seems to be able to take a lot of money and turn it into really good movies, and this is no exception.
No, totally. But I saw it in the theaters, but you didn't. Do you remember seeing it at home, I would guess, right?
Yeah, I saw it at home.
And it's still, you knew coming into it that with this big, massive money-making, like it wasn't a surprise. You'd heard of the Titanic movie, I'm assuming, to some level?
Well, yeah, but I mean, it's hard to tell. You know, you can hear about these legendary movies and sometimes they're a miss. You know, I wouldn't say it's the best movie of all time, but if you did, I wouldn't blame you. So for you, is this the best movie of all time?
Well, I don't know if it's the best movie, but it's one of the most expensive movies of all time. When we were talking about James Cameron putting this movie together, I was reminded that one reporter asked him in the middle of this interview, they said, is it true when he was filming Titanic, because they built a boat, I mean, we won't get deep into the history, it's fairly well known. He said, is it true this is the most expensive movie ever made? And I think Cameron said, every movie I made is most expensive, because previous to that he made The Abyss, which wasn't as popular, but that was filmed underwater. And then before that he made Terminator 2.
Was he the one who made Waterworld as well?
No, that was Kevin Reynolds. Yeah, Kevin Reynolds and Kevin Costner. But yeah, and Terminator 2 was at the time cost $120 million, which was a lot back in 1992. So yeah, I think he was a little bit like, I know what I'm doing. I'm sorry, Paramount and Fox, I'm spending all your money, but it's going
to
be worth it.
Well, yeah, we kind of mentioned it earlier, but you think, man, do you really have to go down to the wreck of the Titanic and do all this specific stuff and like hot tubs and stuff? Like you said, this movie, the behind the scenes is kind of almost infamous for being indulgent and expensive. But, I mean, yeah, like
but,
third grossest.
$1.8 billion later.
Yeah. No, so it's hard. And it's a good movie, too. You know, you can't say that this didn't deserve the money it made. I don't think. Well, maybe you could. But it's a really good movie. It deserved to make a lot of money. So it's not like you can go to Cannes and be like, you're putting a hole in our pocket or something like that.
And I think because there was, I can't remember the exact story, but they said that the furnishings, like the cutlery and the plates, he went back to the original company.
Yeah, that made them, yeah.
Yeah, and the boats and stuff like that. And so you can say, you know, when if you're the producer, if you're 20th Century Fox, you're saying, does that really help the story that the cutlery, this expensive cutlery, was the same one? But, you know, like I said, $1.83 billion later, you go, yeah, that was a good decision.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, as you mentioned, it's a bit odd. it's, you know, it's a historical fiction, I guess you could say. Mm-hmm. I don't know the exact definition of that genre, but like you said, we all know the story. I mean, it helps a bit that it starts, you know, in the future with a survivor. But you're a bit like, huh, I wonder what's going to happen. But I think the movie works with that, wouldn't you say?
For sure. I remember being in the theater halfway through and thinking, I wish that they wouldn't hit the iceberg. I can't remember how I articulated, but knowing that disaster is coming. And that's when I knew that Cameron had won over me and my proxy others, was that we didn't want this horrible thing we knew was coming to occur.
Yeah, and there's something about the timing of it, too, that when you go into the movie and they get on the Titanic, it's in, like, the forefront of your mind. This boat is going to hit an iceberg and sink, and, you know, most of these people are going to die. That's because that's what you're, you know, the story. But then as time goes on, that kind of sinks further back into your mind. And I don't know if this is what you had, but for me, I'd almost basically forgotten about it when they actually hit the iceberg. And so it was like, oh, right, this has to happen. And you're like, oh, no, you know.
Yeah, 100%. I think that's exactly it. It was an engaging story with engaging characters and an interesting setting. And then happens to involve a large ship sinking at the end, but yeah.
Yeah, I guess you could say, you know, that's how a lot of movies end up, is that you know the ending of a lot of movies as they're going, so this isn't too different. But you talked about the actors. They weren't stars before this?
Yeah, so, I mean, I think everybody knows who Leonardo is and Kate Winslet is, but yeah, no, they were cast. I think they went out of their way to not get stars. DiCaprio had some cred as this Oscar-nominated actor.
Do you remember what movie for?
What's Eating Gilbert Grape, I think. Or was that Johnny Depp? But there was some movie he was a supporting actor role. No, maybe it was a different one. But he was in Romeo and Juliet with Baz Luhrmann, right, with Claire Danes.
Yeah.
So he had been part of a big production. I think that helped a bit. So.
Yeah, and the romance, I guess, too, you know.
Yeah. And I was just researching this, that Kate Winslet had pestered Cameron for the role, and I think she's brilliant in it. She was nominated for an Oscar for Best Actress, but he was not for Best Actor.
Oh, really? Yeah. Supporting actor.
Yeah, there's a bit of a thing about that. I don't think he's nominated this year for, Killers of the Flower Moon. That's right.
Oh,
yeah.
Right.
He's not nominated for that one either. But the one actor I did want to talk about was Billy Zane, the cad.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Did he make an impression on you, that guy?
I mean, he was a solid character, but I wouldn't, you know, the actor, I wouldn't, I don't know much about him.
See, that's the thing. I always thought it was an unsung role. I mean, you have to see it a couple times to do that, because he has to be reasonably sympathetic. You have to think that, okay, Kate Winslet's character, Rose, wants to be with him, you know, to some degree. He's dashing, he's a jerk, and then, you know, then he has to have that turn where he picks up a handgun and shoots at them, and you think, oh, that dirty guy. So, I mean, he has to be, on one level, charming, even if it's superficial, but then he has to be dastardly eventually. And I think that it was a bit of he didn't get a credit enough for making that turn. And there was moments in the movie, even when Rose wasn't in the story, I was like, why wouldn't you go off with that guy, you know?
Yeah, and it really helps us, like, DiCaprio's character in that. You know, we see him as the opposite of this guy, and more charming and more, you know, we cheer for him more.
He was more rough and tumble and more man of the streets, right?
Yeah. And, you know, with a bit of a rougher character who's kind of sometimes pushing Rose around, or, you know, getting her to do stuff, then it's like there's more welcome for that if you have someone bad on the other side.
What's interesting to me, he has a very small role in Back to the Future. And then I think he was actually auditioning for Jack, DiCaprio's role, and then later on, kind of riding the wave of this, he was cast in a couple things. Then he was going to be in, after Spider-Man, but before Iron Man, he was cast as the Phantom, a 1930s comic character whose main superpower is handguns, and he was the main character. And I wasn't that bad; it wasn't great, but so after Titanic, they were kind of trying to position him to be this square-jawed hero leading man, and it didn't take, although he's still apparently employed today. So
So I guess there's a lot of the rising tide raises all ships.
There's a okay, try to avoid all the puns coming into my head here, but
and you started with one, so don't blame me.
That's right. Yeah, we each get one. So do you want to talk about the song, or?
Sure. So My Heart Will Go On, it's, you know, Celine Dion's most popular song. Great song.
It's her most popular single of all time?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
And it's hard to listen to that song without thinking about the movie Titanic, wouldn't you say?
I was just going to ask you that too. Yeah, for me, it's not. The movie was so overpowering and so interesting, and it had the historical. You knew what "quote unquote" Titanic was beforehand. That the song was kind of a part of that. But maybe for the next generation, the two go together. I guess is what I'm asking.
Yeah, well, it's a bit odd. I think when you listen to them, to "My Heart Will Go On," you think of Titanic, but not necessarily the other way around. You know, Titanic is 3 hours of movie, and it's got a romance and a tragedy and a couple time skips in there. And, you know, there's a lot going on. So you don't necessarily think... There's a lot of things to think of in Titanic before you think of My Heart Will Go On, but not the other way around.
So do you think... I mean, Titanic is a great movie, you said already, and, you know, it's got all that popularity. Do you think My Heart Will Go On is a great song?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of, you know, this is the pinnacle of Celine Dion's singing, or I guess I haven't listened to enough stuff to say that, but I think it's really, this really shows off her voice, and it's this really strong voice that's, I don't know, yeah, just, this is right in her wheelhouse.
So let's listen to the great French-Canadian singer Celine Dion and the song from Titanic.
MRG Live is happy to present Anomaly with his live band at the Wise Hall on Saturday, February 24th, with support from Blue Wednesday. Anomaly has toured his electro jazz project all over the world, but this February, the Montreal-based artist embarks on a full Canadian tour for the very first time. Come out to experience the innovative fusion of electronic beats, jazz harmonies, and funky grooves from the one and only Anomaly, live in concert with his band. Don't miss Anomaly at the Wise Hall in Vancouver on February 24th, 2024. Tickets are on sale now at admitone.com.
You're listening to that song from that movie on CITR 101.9 UBC. So, Logan, tell us a little bit about the song we just heard.
So, originally, this wasn't a song with lyrics to it, and it wasn't her song. It was James Horner, who he wrote the song soundtrack for A Beautiful Mind, which is our intro, so a bit of an Easter egg there.
Oh, yeah, cool. Yeah, he's written like 300 soundtracks.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Scores.
So he wrote up this theme, and then they were looking around for people to sing it, and Celine Dion was chosen, and they said, we're going to add lyrics to it. And, you know, and it went from there. I mean, it's weird to think that this song was without Celine Dion in its initial production.
So I was reading that when Cameron was writing the script, he was listening to Enya. It's Irish? I had to get the Irish and Scottish mixed up. Well, that's interesting, though, because they asked Enya to do the soundtrack, and she said no, so that's how James Horner got involved, I think.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, so they'd Celine Dion was somewhat popular, but not...
Oh, yeah, she was a star then, for sure, yeah.
But this like, skyrocketed her. I mean, this song was the second best-selling single by a woman in all of history. I mean, this was just craziness, and, you know, it helps that it was part of a really popular movie, too, I think.
Yeah, I mean, she was a really accomplished singer. I don't think James Horner or Cameron by that thing would. I mean, she was an excellent singer, and her range and her, and I can't think of the right terms, but yeah. So I think that they picked her because she could kill it, right?
Yeah, and also I don't think that Cameron really wanted a pop song as part of this. I read that, yeah, he was opposed to having almost any song in it, but this song was different enough, and I think that helps that Celine Dion sang it to be something really powerful and like a theme, you know, that you can have this in a movie.
Yeah, and if I remember right, it comes at the end, like at the end credits.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I mean, I can understand he didn't want to have a song over top of in the movie, like a lot of other songs or movies at the time did have a lot of music in the middle, so...
Yeah, and it's the other thing is, even for the end, this is, you know, this is a story of a tragedy and a real life tragedy. So, you know, if you were playing Walking on Sunshine at the end, maybe that wouldn't be too appropriate. So it's still a romance, so you can't sing about how everything is sad.
But this song drove the point home, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, it was a sad song, and it was a romantic song, and it was a powerful song, and that's kind of, those three things are all the same with the movie.
Mm-hmm. No, that's a good point. What was interesting to me when they're putting the soundtrack together was that Christian pop artist Michael W. Smith, he submitted a song, In My Arms Again. Rumor has it they asked him to write a song. They listened to it and they said, no, we're not going to use it. So it was for him, it was a brush with greatness that he could have sold 27 million copies or whatever it was instead.
But 18 million copies, something like that, yeah. No, this could have been his song that was part of, you know, one of the most popular movies of all time and that women would cry to till this day, but it's not the...
Maybe that's a topic. I know we talked about songs that didn't make the movie or songs that got rejected or something like that. That's another episode, maybe.
That song that wasn't from that movie, maybe.
That song that didn't make that movie. There is a James Bond song by Radiohead, which I won't get deep into because I want to save that for another show, that almost was in a... Spectre, but it wasn't. You please feel free to Google it.
It's hard to say that Radiohead needed much of a boost, unlike this guy.
Yeah, but again, it's just like Celine Dion.
True enough.
Would have had a massive career otherwise, or at least she was already popular. So yeah, this.
But this song kind of cemented her immortality, as it were.
Yeah, and it's interesting. I will want to talk a little bit about her present. Is that she did a what's it called in Vegas, residence in Vegas for a while. And I apologize if I mix up her personal story, but I heard that she didn't want to go on the road and that she wanted to raise her children in a place. So she was in Vegas for years, maybe. She's had some health issues recently that she's stopped singing. And then I also just found out that some Hollywood production is making a documentary about the life of Celine Dion. So, I mean, mm-hmm. I think to your point, she led an interesting, compelling, you know, popular life as a pop singer. That's kind of doing her justice, not say pop singer, contemporary singer.
But yeah,
the Titanic would definitely be the pinnacle, like you said.
Yeah. And, you know, for any of you that are Canadian, she's kind of celebrated as a Canadian icon as well. And, you know, that's part of the reason why we picked her for this week. But she was the first Canadian to ever receive a Grammy for Record of the Year, of men or women. So it was a bit, she kind of carried the torch for Canadian music during this time, I think.
Mm. Hey there, do you like sweet and sentimental stories and songs?
Do you enjoy a pleasant chat and a giggle with pals? Then you're going to love our show, Love Notes, here on CITR 101.9 FM.
Every week, a new guest selects a great love of their life, a sibling, a romantic partner, a best friend, and we get to make a show about the stories and songs that make up their love.
Join us on this journey for the ears and the heart every other Tuesday at 10 a.m.
As far as music playing during the movie itself, outside of the score, there is an interesting moment in the movie, right?
Yeah, I mean, you'd be hard pressed to put you want things in this movie to be realistic, and one of the things they had was there was like a quartet or trio or something like that of string instruments that were playing as the Titanic was sinking, which is apparently a true story.
Yeah, have you heard the story behind that?
That people remember. The hearing music while they were going down.
Yeah, that's what I'd heard too. I'd heard that even before the movie had come out. I mean, that's a testament to Cameron that he would pick up those little bits like about electricity not working and people leaving other people behind and this part and put it into the movie.
Yeah, and this was incredibly impactful. I remember watching the movie. It's, I think for a while there's no music. Mm-hmm. You know, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but yeah, there's a lot of time where it's quiet, and it's the dead of night, so it's quiet, and there's a lot of chaos going on, and yeah, you just hear this sweet string music, and these guys kind of realizing that they're going to die, and I was
touching, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that was, you know, I don't know if Cameron meant it this way, but that felt like one of the most emotional parts of the movie, even though I don't know any of their names, you know, it's not like they had a big story behind them, but there was something to that, them playing as the Titanic sank.
Yeah, no, I think it was a brilliant script that came in the moment when the ship was sinking. And like you said, none of the characters, we didn't even know who they were. They were just some people playing string instruments and suddenly they're part of the scene, right?
Yeah, the focal point of the scene. And I wonder, there is something to be said about a lot of the first half or first two-thirds, three-quarters of the movie was these kind of emotional beats of them falling in love. You know, Leonardo DiCaprio and Kate Winslet. But then as the rest of the movie gets on, it almost becomes like an action movie or like an apocalypse movie as the ship sinks. And they take credit to Cameron. He took a long time for the ship to sink, but that's what happened in real life. So.
No, I think that's an excellent point, too, is that you're dragged through that. And I think that, you know, that was one of the heart of the story was how painful it was. And I mean, a lesser filmmaker, if we want, could have skipped through it or could have, like, let's get to the part where the ship's in the water or underwater, right?
Yeah, and so, yeah, he kept the realism and he kept the sorrow of it. And I think that's, you know, these guys playing the instruments kind of shows that, too, that this is a slow death, I guess. It didn't just suddenly happen.
It's a tragic death. It's not an adventurous death where some people got in the boat and lifeboats and some didn't, right?
And even at the end when they're on the board or whatever, and the endless debates about whether another capper would have been.
I don't want to go into that one, yeah.
But, you know, even then it was like there wasn't, I mean, I guess they did have a semi-indulgent shot of his, you know, his face losing expression and falling down into the abyss. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, even then that was kind of slow and you knew it was coming, but, you know, they still dragged it out appropriately. So it wasn't too long, but they gave it time to sit.
Yeah, I guess it was important for the story to make this a painful experience, the ship sinking or the ship crashing, it's sinking, the survivors in the water. Yeah, there's no easy outs for the audience in any of this, right?
Yeah, no. And then we can just cut to the future and everything's cool. But
so, and I think, you know, the one other thing I wanted to mention was the impact or the legacy of this. And as I was reading up about the Titanic, like I've seen the movie, you know, a few times, I had to recall that you've heard of Titanic as metaphor, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like if your project was horrible, it would be like, this is pre-1997. If you had built some monstrosity, they call it a white elephant, you call it a Titanic. That was a metaphor for man's hubris or technological hubris. Have you ever heard that before?
Yeah, yeah.
And so it's amazing that the word Titanic had that baggage. Number one, as a big ship. Number two, as an accident. And number three, as a lesson for early 20th century Western world to learn about.
Yeah, about building too big and, you know. Yeah, like you said, hubris is a really good word for it.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and about arrogance, how it was supposed to be the unsinkable ship and stuff like that.
Yeah, and so to me, one of the strengths of Titanic was you get past that. And it talks about how it was designed so it could be sunk. And you know, there's some smart remarks about it. But the point of the movie isn't to dwell on the hubris or the technological achievement or flaws there. So
yeah, you know, that's a good point. You could have made like almost like a documentary. I'm sure there are plenty of documentaries out there about how this was the design and, you know, this is why it failed. And we're going to go through in meticulous detail all the paneling. But this was... That's not what James Cameron was about here. He made it a story of people, which I think that was a really good choice.
Yeah, I think that, yeah, you had to have that human story, a human aspect of it to make it more appealing and to make it so you didn't want the ship to sink. But I think the fact that you don't think of Titanic that way, you know, here's a really weird movie analogy here is that there was Quentin Tarantino's movie Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. I don't know if you've seen that one.
I have not, no.
Yeah, Brad Pitt and Leonardo DiCaprio. Yay,
yeah, there you go.
So it's a fictional story about the Manson family murders of Sharon Tate and what was going on in Hollywood in the 70s at that time. And I didn't really care for the movie that much. It's, you know, Tarantino movie was typical. But I remember him, he said afterwards, I want to give people a different way of thinking about Sharon Tate, the actress, the starlet, the up-and-coming starlet, played by Margot Robbie, because he said up until that time, it was a lot of, she was a victim and people felt sorry for her, and the focus was on the Manson family and the murderers. Mm-hmm. And so he wanted to change the channel on this.
Yeah, that whenever you think of her death, not anything else.
Yeah, and so again, it's a poor analogy, but it's the same thing that Cameron did with Titanic, is that now we think of this wonderful story and the tragedy of it and less of the, you know, the human technological achievement that every other movie about was before.
Yeah, and I mean, you still think of the tragedy of it, like you said, but there is something to be said about, there's still a story behind that tragedy. And if you know that story, that, you know, it impacts you differently, I think.
You've been listening to that song from that movie on CITR 101.9 FM. I'm Movie Maverick Mike, and you can find me on Facebook and Instagram.
I'm Logan the Extra, and you can find a recording of this show and all of our shows on CITR.ca.
Don't forget that this week is also fundraising for CITR. There are several projects that this radio station is undertaking, including some upgrades to the broadcast tower. Please have a look at our website, or you can also go to donate.citr.ca and contribute to the fine program we have here.
Yeah, we'd be very thankful if you would like to contribute to help programs like ours and other people's stay on the air. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you later.